Chapter 15. Timur Yamadayev crossed his knife and fork on his plate and then pushed the remains of his dinner toward the center of the table. As he stood, he waved across the other tables in George's roadside cafe to get the eye of George's wife, Mary. He pointed to the bills in his hand and then laid them under the edge of the plate. He was enough of a regular that he didn't need a check anymore.
"Thanks, Tom," Mary said. "Have a good night."
To the residents of Winston, West Virginia, and to everyone he knew in America, Timur was known as Tom Breen, purveyor of Breen's Body Shop. A dues-paying member of the Chamber of Commerce and the Rotary, he rode both fire and rescue with the WVFD. The moose thing was a step too far, even for maintaining a solid cover. In 3 months, he'd celebrate his 10th anniversary in this godforsaken shithole. At least there finally was light for him at the end of the septic pipe. The fact that his phone had buzzed a couple of minutes ago told him that relief might be even closer than he'd been hoping. Stepping out onto the sidewalk, he inhaled the chilly air and let it go through pursed lips. A glance at the burner phone that so rarely buzzed revealed a simple message. Location 6, Beagle. In the newest version of the codebook circulated by Daoud Masayev, the commander of all 16 sleeper cells throughout the United States, Beagle meant 2130 hours, and Location 6, one of 18 locations throughout the local environs, meant a very dark culvert in the shadow of a crumbling bridge near the long-abandoned Mainline 17 mine. Countless such dormant mines cratered this part of West Virginia, like so many massive mouths waiting to be fed again. Perhaps the time truly had come. In one more week, two at the most, all the parts of the plan would be in place to blow a hole right through the heart of American self-righteousness. And Timur would be able to start his long, circuitous journey home to Chechnya. The site of the meeting was a solid 35-minute drive away, the last 10 or so on roads that only pretended to exist. Narrow and steeply pitched, those last couple of miles were nothing that his Ford F-150 couldn't handle on a night like this. But if there'd been an eighth of an inch of ice, it would have been a suicidal drive. Because there really was nowhere to go down here, there was zero risk of encountering oncoming traffic. So he switched his headlights off and donned night vision goggles. No sense attracting the attention of passing cops who might be curious. Every time he engaged in one of these clandestine meetups, his skin crawled with the possibility that it was a setup. That the FBI had turned someone and he'd been lured into a trap. Certainly he'd been on high alert ever since he received word about the bluebirds being caged. While he had no idea what the subject of this meeting was going to be, he thought the smart money pointed to that. The bluebirds, Timur knew their real names to be Craig and Connie Kendall, were the critical link that made the transfer of chemical agents across the border possible. They had recruited the mules on this side of the Rio Grande to accept shipments from the Jungle Tigers. It was unfortunate what happened to the JTs when their leadership was killed, but somehow the snake continued to live even without its head. A nasty bit of work named Quinto Alvarez was in charge of the JTs now, and he needed cash in a hurry to fight off the war they knew was coming to steal their business. Timur's boss, Daoud Masayev, had plenty of cash to bring to the table, but to get it, Alvarez would have to combine his drug business with Masayev's need to funnel special product into the United States. As in any other business, success or failure in the cartel game hinged on effective distribution. In the weeks after the disaster that took out the JT's leadership, before they could get their shit together again, their network of mules and coyotes disintegrated as they changed their loyalties to other cartels. Through a chain of events that Timur hadn't entirely stitched together, either Masaev or Alvarez, or maybe both of them together, discovered discontentment within the leadership of the Cortez cartel. Somebody wanted to make money on the side, and permission was granted to allow C-squared mules to be used to transport special product along with their usual contraband. With their distribution network in place, the flow of special product was established. The delicate trick was to make sure that Armand Cortez never got wind of what was happening under his nose. That would spell death for everyone in that supply chain. Not that Timur lost any sleep over it, but he did admire the cleanliness of the deception. The Jungle Tigers needed only to get the special product to Juarez. From there, it would be handed off to hand-picked mules who would ferry the stuff to El Paso, and from there, it flowed freely through the United States. Timur worried that the smugglers might get arrested at the border. In fact, he knew of three cases where that had happened, but the Americans didn't seem to grasp the seriousness of what was happening. Of those three mules who had been arrested at the border, two had already returned to work in Mexico. Timur didn't know what had happened to the third. The perfect storm of incompetence was making Timur's job 10 times easier than it had any right to be. The Bluebirds had made sure that the supply train through the United States stayed on its tracks, not just for C-Squared's drugs, but also for Masaev's special product. The flow of the chemical agent was not as voluminous as that of the drugs, but it was becoming more regular. Last month, they'd moved 7 canisters across the border, up from the 3 they'd been able to get through just 5 weeks ago. Timur's job was to command the cells that received the special product. For now, that meant just sitting on them until the time came to make the attack. Just a few days ago, the cells were well-positioned and well-stocked, with 15 canisters of special product distributed among the 12 cells throughout the various states. When the Bluebirds got themselves arrested, Masaev ordered a massive change in the larger strategy, transferring much of the special product to a single location in Tennessee. Timur wasn't sure what the end game might be, but he imagined that he was about to find out. The wait dragged on. Timur had arrived early to secure a good observation point, and now Masaev was late. The thermometer was in free fall and the air smelled of snow, though the sky was clear enough to reveal the Milky Way. The silhouette of Baxter Bridge cut a sharp line across the sky. Below it, the high-flowing river danced with a million flashes of reflected starlight. As much as Timur hated America, he would miss the West Virginia vistas. At last, a large pickup truck with blinding LED headlights painted the final curve to make its way down the hill. It rolled to a stop directly under the bridge, a spot that made it visible and obvious to everyone who might be looking, except for those people driving directly overhead. Clearly, stealth did not come naturally to everyone. The driver stepped out of the vehicle, put a cigarette between his lips, and lit it with a match. Without pausing, he dropped the cigarette onto the rocks without crushing it, then lit another. That was the signal. Timur rose from his location behind a boulder on the riverbank and walked toward the new arrival. He lit his own cigarette when he was still 25 yards away, helping to ensure that he wouldn't startle his contact and get himself shot. "Is that you, Timur?" the other man called through the night. "Around here, I'm Tom," Timur replied. He would have to hide his surprise that his contact this evening would be Daoud Masaev himself. Whatever was in play this evening was a serious matter. Masaev made no effort to close the distance with Timur as he approached. Such was his rank that he didn't need to. "Assalamu alaikum," Timur said when he was close enough for his voice to carry no more than a few feet over the sound of the rushing water. He never spoke his native tongue anymore, but to his ear there was no English equivalent to the original greeting. Wa alaikum salam, Masayaf replied. To what do I owe the honor? The candle boys, Masayaf said, getting right to it. You took care of that? Rather than stubbing out his cigarette, Timur had kept his, and he took a drag. It had been too long since he'd felt the rush of the nicotine. Americans noticed people who smoked, or at least that's what someone had determined through whatever research protocols would make such a proclamation. Thus, it was a vice that needed to be refused, even as the consumption of alcohol had to be embraced. To be honest, he wasn't at all sure that that second vice would change. He'd come to enjoy the taste and effect of bourbon. We have the children isolated and under guard, Timur said. With much blood having been shed, Masayev said. His tone shimmered with disapproval. The Ballantines asked too many questions, Timur explained. They seemed not to believe the story we told them. I could have ignored that and lived in worry, or I could solve the problem. I chose the latter. And you lost your entire Virginia team in the process. Timur felt his stomach muscles tighten. Whatever Masayev was implying was a surprise to him. I don't understand what you mean by that. Put out that cigarette, Masayev commanded. That's a disgusting habit. If he were not so much on edge, Timur would have objected to the order, but he dropped the Marlboro under the rocks and crushed it under his foot. You need to watch the news, Masayev explained. 7 bodies were found shot dead inside the Ballantine's house. Timur pursed his lips. The Ballantines numbered 6, 2 adults, 4 children. Aha, Masayev said, holding his finger in the air. That's what I thought, too. As it turned out, the Ballantines' bodies were found inside a van parked down the street from their house. The bodies in the house remained unidentified, the reporter on television said. But one of them was later identified through his fingerprints to be Mansur Chichigov. Does this name ring a bell with you, as the Americans like to say? The tightening in his gut was beginning to turn into a cramp. He is the leader of our cell in Danville, Virginia. Was, Masayev said. The operative word is was. Apparently he is dead now, along with 6 others. By process of elimination, it shouldn't be too hard for you to determine who they will turn out to be. This wasn't right at all. Why had he heard nothing? How were they killed? All I know is what I heard on the news. They were shot to death, and all of them were armed. The reporter quoted a police source as saying that they suspect a home invasion that went sideways. Timur struggled to get the facts to align. Who killed them if the Ballantines were already dead? Masayev paused for effect. I think that's a very interesting question. I think you need to be very careful. Could it be that our friend in the cartel business is not as loyal as you wish he was? Could he be working the other side against you? He is not our friend, Daoud. He is your friend. What do your instincts tell you? My instincts tell me that this is a bad time to be counting on my instincts. I'll do what I can to find out and get it to stop. Or, at the very least, to make sure that you are adequately warned. Timur nodded his thanks, then stood taller. Wait, the bodies were found inside the home? Yes. The Ballantines' home? Yet the Ballantines' bodies were elsewhere? In a van down the street. How is that possible? If they'd already completed their mission and had left the house, why would they go back? Masayev patted his arm. It's a disturbing mystery, isn't it? But that is only part of the reason we are meeting. Uh-oh. It's not even the most disturbing part of the meeting, Masayev said. Connie Kendall does not yet know that we have her children. Timur closed his eyes and exhaled. He reached into his shirt pocket for another cigarette and fished the matchbook out of the pocket of his jeans. "Don't bother to object," he said as he peeled off a match and lit it. Masayev said, "You got the word to their lawyer, did you not? The same lawyer who does work for the Cortez cartel?" "Yes, I already told you that." "Well, the lawyer was not allowed to visit the surviving Bluebird. She is being represented by counsel selected by the American government." Timur savored the smoke. "Is that legal?" "Apparently it is. I suppose that Connie Kendall could challenge the legality in court, but not until the FBI has had many valuable hours to press details out of her. Weeks, probably." Timur squinted up at the stars, fully aware that the chill he felt had little to do with the air temperature. "Shit." "Indeed," Masayev said. "You need to get word to Connie Kendall that if she says a word to the officials about any of this, the next thing she will see of her precious children is their eyeballs stuffed into envelopes. Are we clear on this?"
"I'll get it done," Timur said.
"How the hell am I supposed to get information to a prisoner?" Even in the dark, he could see the flash of Masayev's teeth as he smiled. "Don't look so glum," he said. "You haven't had to do any real work for us in a long time. Just remember that all the clocks are ticking. Theirs as well as ours."